This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to another special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we continue our series of Why Blank One podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor Season rankings, which this week takes us to China and winner Todd. Mm-hmm. I'm David Bloomberg, and with me, of course, is my co-host, that bitch, Jessica Lewis.
What the hell was that all about?
Well, oh, sorry. I had a strategy to start off the podcast mean and get nicer along the way so you'd appreciate me more.
You know, that's an interesting strategy. I wonder if it will work for you. I'm thinking probably not. No, unless you get really helpful around the podcast in addition to being nice, maybe. But we'll see how this starts.
Okay. Well, while I'm still in mean mode, we can tell you there is no jumping ahead to Appendix B.
Listen, I'm just going to tell it like it is, okay? I like to jump ahead, and I'm going to jump ahead. And I'm just going to be brutally honest with you, because I'll be someone else from the show.
Anyway. All right. Well, as we've mentioned previously, we're focusing on two groups of winners for these podcasts, those who make us wonder how they won, and those who did such a good job that we think it's worth discussing them. We're in the home stretch now, and starting with this podcast, it'll only be people in the second group from now on. Mm-hmm. And of course, this week we'll also discuss some of Courtney and Amanda. We'll do all of that by comparing their play to the rules I wrote after the first season and have been modifying ever since. At the beginning of this season, Jeff Probst said the single greatest document in the history of strategy is The Art of War.
Mm.
But come on, we know he's wrong. It's my rules.
Right. And that's why it's been in poster form now and t-shirt form, because that is
poster, t-shirt, mug. Oops, I'm holding it up to the wrong place. I'm holding it up to my screen, not to my camera. That was good.
It'd be really awesome if Jeff Probst gave us a shout out like that.
Yeah. All we have to do is wait. Like, how many years ago did Sun Tzu write that? Hundreds, thousands?
It was a long time
ago. It's been a long time.
It's been a very long time.
Yeah. But if you know, any listener who wants to refamiliarize yourself with the real document that tells you the strategy, it's at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules, which reminds me that in a few weeks, I'm going to have to update that. And of course, you know, there's the shorter version that we were just talking about, the poster, t-shirt.
It's over here.
Yes, whatever, there.
It's somewhere behind me.
It's somewhere. Now, the poster you can get at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2. Everything else you can get at robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link near the top, take you to the RHAP shop. You can either scroll through to find any of these designs, or you can like search mugs or search t-shirts or search sweatshirts.
And we did not plan this at all.
No, we didn't.
It was very funny that we both ended up with a t-shirt.
We both turned on the cameras and went,
Look at that.
So
great minds think alike.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we get into discussion of the most important, or how each player did in comparison to the most important document in the history of strategy, there are some
You're
things.
You're really putting yourself out there. I love
Hey, why
this.
Not? if you can't promote yourself, why have a podcast?
Exactly.
Right?
I totally agree. So it is the most important document as far as strategy is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Duh. Yeah. I mean, does the Art of War have t-shirts? I don't think so.
No.
Does the Art of War have a mug? I don't think so. All I'm saying.
All right.
But before we get to that, few things we always like to talk about beforehand. Now, during the Wiggle Through Time last year, we covered why Aaron lost. So we had already fairly recently watched the first five episodes. But when we rewatched, or when we, rewatched them that time, we were not keeping an eye out for Todd. We were keeping an eye out for what Aaron did wrong. Mm-hmm. So we had to rewatch even those to, you know, cover all the stuff, because a lot does happen early on for Todd, Amanda, and Courtney. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to hear what we had to say about Aaron, you can head over, you know, to Rob Has a Podcast and search for Why Aaron Lost, and you can hear what we had to say then. Here's a little spoiler. Aaron was not just swap screwed.
I know, but I still hated that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it was still terrible. It was terrible.
Now, in that podcast, and, you know, a few minutes ago, we discussed Jean Robert and his brilliant strategy to be a lazy jerk early and get nicer, which was so bad that he is literally an example of what not to do in the fifth rule of the greatest strategy document ever written. Human nature is such that you can bank goodwill or bad will. So if you show yourself to be a good person and you mess up, people will often forgive you. He didn't mean to do that.
Right.
Whatever. If you show yourself to be a bad person and you do something better, it doesn't suddenly mean you're not a bad person anymore.
Yeah, it was something that I don't think. Well, I will say this. I think that we have seen in other seasons of Survivor where people do come in with a different type of strategy. And I think this can be equated a lot to those people who, the not helping out around camp. We've seen mm-hmm. that a lot more than I'm just going to be mean to people and I'm not going to be real nice and I'm going to be lazy on top of it. And then once I start helping and once I start being nice, then that shift will happen. I really feel like we've seen that lazy angle worked before, where people think, well, if I don't do a lot now and then I do a lot later, then they'll realize that I'm improving. But it's not something that we've seen ever work.
Right.
So it's not something that I would say, yes, get out there and try this strategy, because it's certainly not going to impress anyone on your tribe.
I mean, for one thing, you got to make it past the first vote.
Yes.
I mean, how many times have we seen in the first vote, people are like, well, you know, they talk about a whole bunch of different reasons. Well, that person wasn't doing anything at camp.
Right. And I mm-hmm. do think that that's what we see a lot, is with that first vote, people are kind of scrambling sometimes to find reasons to vote people out, because you've mm-hmm. only been involved with each other for like 3 days, and any little thing can be the reason why you get voted out. And so if that's your strategy going in, that could be the reason why you're walking out the door.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people get voted out first because they're a jerk. Sometimes people get voted out first because they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, maybe being a jerk and lazy isn't the best idea.
No. I mean,
even if he hadn't been voted out when he was, Jean Robert's strategy was a loser from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely interesting to see the dynamic between he and Todd, and how Todd was very mindful of what Jean Robert was doing, as was Jean Robert mindful of Todd. So I feel like Jean Robert walked into this game really having all of the tools he needed to play, I think, a really great game of Survivor, if he had decided that that was the type of game he wanted to play. So it's unfortunate to see that he thought that this would be a smarter way for him to play the game, as opposed to walking in going, I am a strategist for a living. Like, this is what I do. And I'm a larger male that's stronger than most of these people who are on my tribe. So this will be beneficial as well. And really taking advantage of those things that he brings to the table. It was just unfortunate to see that he decided to try to take it a different way. And it certainly wasn't working.
No. Anyway, another thing that wasn't working. Amanda's shorts. Okay.
Wait, now before you start, I just want to say that when my husband found out I was watching this season, mm-hmm. he saw her before he saw the fuzzy bottom and just said, isn't she the one that had her butt blurred out the whole time? Now, this is like years and years later. Yeah. And he still remembers her with the blurred out butt.
I mean, he has a better memory than me because I didn't remember that I had noticed it last year. And I certainly right. didn't remember that we had noticed it way back when, because so the topic came up on the main Rob podcast and I had planned to bring it up anyway. And of course, we're talking about the blurring of Amanda's backside. And I couldn't figure out what the heck could she have been wearing to cause that? Because how often have we seen Survivor women with skimpy bikini bottoms?
Mm-hmm.
And she was wearing shorts.
Yeah.
But then, so, you know, as I was preparing for the podcast, I was reminded that this had been a topic at the time of the original airing as well, as I looked back through my older articles and things. And I even asked her about it when I interviewed
her. Look at you. You asked her about her fuzzy bottom.
I did. And as a matter of fact, she laughed and said, my parents called me Fuzzbutt. And she said, I honestly don't know. I have no idea why my butt was blurred so much. I guess it was because it was a family show. So even Amanda was a bit fuzzy about it.
Oh, my word. It is strange, the things that. Because honestly, like, I feel like that becomes more of a distraction than just leaving it alone. Like, just no one's going to notice. Every time something is blurred out is when someone goes, ooh, what's that all about? You know, I mean, it's, but for the most part, nobody is paying attention to those types of things unless it's mm-hmm. a very, very obvious top missing kind of situation where you have to blur it out. But mm-hmm. come on, let the girl just
or
wear
Dave her taking off all his clothes for a wrestling match that made no sense. But
that
yeah. But did you notice when Amanda's sister came, her butt was blurred too?
What?
I'm pretty sure it was when at least in one shot. I'm pretty sure she was wearing like the same shorts.
I think you're definitely making this up.
I would like to think it was the editors playing a joke, you know, but
that if they really did that, kudos to them, because that's really funny. And I have to go back and watch. Are you serious?
I didn't write it down as a note, believe it or not. When I take strategy notes,
we need to check this because
that's what my memory says.
That would be hilarious if that's what they did. That would be so funny because, you know, someone then realized like this is overkill with the fuzzy bottom.
Right.
So well, let's just make it a joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
So yes, I did ask Amanda, and it's interesting because I find, and someone asked me about this on in the patron Facebook group, like, do you find yourself changing your mind over time or do you find yourself having the same opinions? I said, mostly I have the same thoughts. I mean, some things change, mm-hmm. but mostly I have the same thoughts I find. And as a reminder to listeners, you know, the way I do this is I don't look at any of my old notes until I've watched the whole season already.
Right. Yeah.
And then I compare. And usually I have taken notes on the same things that I noticed back then. So you might say, time saver, David, just take your notes first. But Jessica called that cheating. So,
does that bother you?
Yes, it does.
You know what that is?
But what I have found that, it's interesting because not only do I often have the same thoughts, but I often have the same questions. We'll get to one later that I was like, wow, I wonder if Todd did this. And then I found out, oh, I asked Todd about this. Same thing with Amanda and her fuzz butt.
That's amazing. Know?
So
I think we have a hashtag already.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the out of context quote. People are going to find something out of all of this. So.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
If you know, out of context account, if you can't find something in our discussions of Amanda's fuzzy butt, that's it. You're done.
Hashtag fuzz butt.
Yeah. So Anyway, but speaking of interviews, one of the people I also interviewed, of course, was Courtney. I think hers was the most fun. Now, my memory tells me I wasn't her biggest fan during the show, during the actual airing of the show. But she turned me around as either as the season went on or at least in that interview. And she even said during one part of the discussion, so, you know, I would be interviewing and typing as they were answering. And so sometimes they'd have to wait for me to catch up. And during the discussion, at one point when I was typing her answer, she said, "I'm not a heinous bitch all the time."
Ooh, she called you out.
No. She was saying it was in reference to how she acted. She was calling herself out.
Oh, I thought maybe
making
you had
fun of herself.
I thought maybe you had called her that at one point in time.
I don't think so. I did call the two of the people we discussed at the last podcast that. No, that was just her making fun of herself.
Interesting. She's great. I enjoy her.
Yeah. And, you know, that interview led to a big question about who voted how at the end. Because I had asked her about her relationship with Frosty, and she said, "The overblown showmance attempt was funny for both of us. It's more uncomfortable on his end, but I didn't get a vote from Frosty. I got it from PG." And I said, "Well, the official CBS site said you got a vote from Frosty and Denise." And she was like, "No, Frosty and PG told me how they voted. And then, you know, so I know that I got it from PG." And then at the nearer to the end of the podcast, she said, "I want to know what Cracker Jacks are running the official website. You and I may have a fight to the death over that." And I responded, "Well, you know, as long as we use swords, I'm good." And she was like, "Oh, that's dirty." But here's the thing. As I was preparing for this podcast, I was like, "Oh, I don't remember who it was that voted for her. So I'll check Wikipedia." And Wikipedia said, "No, Courtney didn't get a vote from PG or Frosty."
Nope.
It was James and Denise. And I was like, "Oh my God, now I've got three different answers."
Yes. Do you have any idea how long I dug around trying to figure this out when I saw that James was the one that had voted for her? And I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, well, I messaged PG.
Look at you.
And I was like, "Hey, this is a situation. Can you tell me what went on?" She was like, "Yeah, you know, I did not. I voted for Todd. James voted for Courtney. You know, so Wikipedia was correct. The official CBS website was wrong. And Courtney must have misunderstood in the chaos of the post finale." Because remember, I was interviewing Courtney right after she had the finale, the post finale party, a red eye to New York, and the early show, and then me.
Yeah.
And so understandable how, you know, all that could have been still swirling.
Well, that vote really does fascinate me. I would like to know why James voted for Courtney.
I have a theory.
I like this. I think. Yes. Are we discussing that now, or are we going to discuss that?
No, later? Skipping to Appendix B. Just for everyone's clarity, Todd got votes from Jean Robert, Jamie, Frosty, and PG. Courtney got Denise and James. Amanda got Eric. So we all know that going in.
Excellent. I'm glad that you clarified.
Yes. Well, hey, we needed to.
I know.
So anyway, when I was writing my articles for Reality News Online, my website, sometimes I would pre-write the bulk of a Y Blank Lost column headed into the finale when I knew there was no way that person had a chance to win. Because I generally had to write at least 10 articles the night of the finale and then the day or two immediately following. So anything I could get done ahead of time was really good.
And
that was when they only had four finalists going into the finale. So for the China finale, I pre-wrote the bulk of those columns for both Denise and Courtney. And I think even Courtney knew she was unlikely to win, as we will discuss.
Well, I must say that I had forgotten that she actually finished second until I watched it again.
Me too.
Yeah. I was like, "What just happened?"
That's later in my notes. I was like, "Oh God, I totally forgot that."
I completely forgot. I 100% thought Amanda got second. And then as the votes are being read, I was like, "Wait a second. Courtney got second?" Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I had completely forgotten.
Yeah, it was. Now, of course, both of us completely forgot that this was a tribal council where three people got votes, because a few podcasts ago, we said we couldn't remember any where that happened. And we were quickly told on Twitter. Yes. And this was, in fact, the first tribal council where three people got votes.
And I love it. Final I know we're going to talk about it. No, we're going to talk about it. But I do love it.
Yeah. So besides those things, is there anything else about the season that you want to discuss before we get to the rules?
Somebody named James.
He did not have a fuzz butt.
He did not have a fuzz butt. I've got to just say that. I did bring something in honor of him. I have an apple.
Don't bite that apple.
Don't bite the apple. And James, I'm not going to. I'm going to listen to you. I'm not going to bite the apple. Damn it. James is just such an incredible character. And I will say this about a majority of the people on China. So I can understand why this season was so far up on the list.
Mm-hmm.
What a great cast. There are times that they put people together and you're kind of like, I don't really understand this. I'm not sure why this person is on this season or whatnot. This season had so many personality types that were all very enjoyable. I mean, some were frustrating and some were confusing, but overall, there was so much great stuff to watch and be entertained by that overall, just the cast was great. And the first time James opened his mouth and was talking about being a grave digger, I about fell over initially watching the season because unbelievable. Something, you know, I don't think there's ever been a grave digger on Survivor, but just such a genuine person and so enjoyable to listen to. And so it pains me every time when he has to walk out with two idols in his bag. That's very painful, but he believed everyone. But I will say this. So
he believed everyone and he didn't do very good math.
I know he didn't. But here's the one thing about James, I will say. I mean, I know I've said a lot, but I spent most of the season in my brain reliving one particular moment where I'm like, when is that challenge going to happen when he's all like oiled up? And I know this sounds terrible, but I was waiting for it because I'm like, I know at some point there is this challenge. And I was getting more and more disappointed as the season progressed. And then I slowly began to realize that was one of the other seasons he was on with Amanda, not this one. And then I was like, God damn it. Excuse my language. But I was, it's just like one of those things where you're like, boy, that image just burned into my brain. So that was something that I just.
You could probably have found it online.
Oh, I have. I definitely have. Okay. It's there. If you search James, it comes up real quick. But. And not only nice to look at, but just a nice overall human being. So, yes. And I will say there were so many beautiful people on this season as well. Just such a great cast. Loved them all. The personalities, amazing. Such a great group. And I've had the pleasure of hanging out with quite a few of them. Hearts Reality and various, you know, functions and things that we've gone to. So I will say just great people all around. I have not gone to hang out with James, though, so that's still on my bucket list. I'm just going to say. So that's, you know. Oh, and I will say this, too. Not about James. Now I'll just talk about something else that I do really miss about Survivor. The cultural component that this season brought was so amazing. I love that we learned so much about China. We learned so much about the culture. And we got to actually see it. And I was in awe of the things that the players got to experience and be a part of. And this is what I feel like is now missing from Survivor, because we're repeating Fiji and we're missing so many of those incredible moments. Because I do think that not only Survivor provides entertainment, but it also provides some education, you know, and an opportunity for people to see places they'll never see in their lifetime and learn things about those places. So I was really enjoying that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. And this was discussed on the other podcasts that
Rob trying to steal their thunder.
No, I just that this was a rarer case also, where not only did you get to see the country and some of the locations and everything else, but they also didn't kind of talk down about it. Mm-hmm. Some of the seasons, it'll be like, can you believe what these backwards people eat? And can you believe some of their traditions? I mean, they don't say it like that, but sometimes that's how it comes off.
Yeah.
And so it didn't, it was more, to me, honoring the culture.
Yes, 100%. Yes. I loved it. It was so nice to enjoy that component of it. So
yeah,
there we are.
So even if I did have to steal, you know, the title from Sun Tzu.
Someone might come and, like, I don't know,
what?
Fight you with that. I think there's going to be a little bit of, I don't know. Nah. We'll see what happens. We'll see. All right.
No, it's not good. I believe that I even referenced The Art of War in one of my older versions.
Probably. Mm-hmm.
But that just shows you that I'm, you know, I am more up to date and better because I referenced him. He didn't reference me. He, you know, he should have.
Listen, if someone mentions this in their final tribal, then you know.
Okay. That's right. Anyway. Moving on, lots of people come into Survivor with a plan, but few come in with a plan that's specific down to the types of people they will align with, and almost nobody can actually make that happen and ride it all the way to a win. Todd did it all, and it worked spectacularly. The question we need to answer is why it worked for him when it often doesn't work for other people. Now that we've done a full rewatch, and I've gone back over my interviews and articles from the time to look at them with a fresh perspective, it's time to take a new look at why Todd won.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The first and most important rule, of course, says to scheme and plot. And I don't know if there has been anyone who showcased this rule better than Todd, other than, you know, maybe Rich Hatch. Todd started planning before he even got into the game, following that portion of this rule that talks about how Rich Hatch and Rob Cesternino did that. As he told me in my interview with him, my plan was to find people that I could align myself with that would work to my advantage. I knew I needed someone smaller than me, someone I could trust, and someone stronger. So I found Courtney, Amanda, and Aaron originally, but it turned into James. I had to use them to my advantage to get as far as I could in the game. He followed the first rule perfectly, which shouldn't be surprising because he had been watching since the days of Richard Hatch, which at the time, you know, Jeff Probst was like, oh my gosh, he was only 15 or 16. That makes me feel so old. Yeah, now you're going to have people on their hat, Jeff, who literally were not born before. So you want to feel old. Todd had been watching since then, and he built some of his own strategy based on Richard Hatch, according to what he said in his early show interview. And of course, these rules were originally based on those same strategies. This rule says, in part, from the very beginning, you have to start making alliances and cementing relationships. And I just quoted Todd in explaining how he did exactly that. He formed that solid core alliance and took it to the very end while doing exactly what an alliance should do. They didn't vote for him to leave. They did vote the way he wanted them to. They kept Todd around, even though they should have gotten rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
He surprised even himself with his ability to stick around and said on the early show that he was a bit shocked his allies kept asking him what the next move would be. But after 3 or 4 days, he figured these people were his to play with, and he just had fun with it.
Yeah. And I think that something that might have worked to his advantage, and I think we see it as the season kind of progresses, is there's this idea that, well, Todd has frustrated a lot of people. He's lied to people. He's backstabbed people. And so there was this idea that that part of his strategy wasn't going to benefit him in the end. And so I think that his strategy ended up working in his favor even more so, because I think other people assumed it was going to be a detriment to him in the end, because he was that person who was seen as conniving and kind of manipulative and, you know, kind of running around behind people's backs. And I think that he managed to choose people to align himself with that didn't do that, which also benefited him, because then everybody could kind of point the finger at him and say, well, he was the guy that was being manipulative. I wasn't. Because everyone had such a different dynamic that they were bringing into that alliance that it really, it balanced itself out so well. And I think that was part of his incredible abilities to choose people. He chose mm-hmm. people in such a fashion that really highlighted what he needed to highlight for himself that could be perceived as bad. And in the end, it just worked completely to his benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll have more to say about that whole topic later, but did I jump ahead a little bit? Yeah, but you linked it back. You circled back, so you're okay. I'm not going to mark off against you.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Probably because we're later in the podcast and I'm not as mean anymore.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So I'm starting to like you more now.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, good. Good.
Yeah.
Now, Amanda said just before the finale that if Todd could backstab anyone to get himself an inch further, he would. And in the finale, Courtney said Todd was a slippery little sucker who always held all the cards. Now, both of these statements from his fellow finalists were true and support that Todd was doing exactly what he needed to do,
mm-hmm.
even if Amanda in particular didn't mean it as a compliment.
Right. Well, and that's, again, going to what I said with just how mm-hmm. he managed to take what would normally be perceived as a bad thing in society. Bad. Survivor, good. And it mm-hmm. all depends on how you play it. And he owned it, and he knew how to make it work for his game and not let it hurt his game, because it was almost like, yeah, go ahead and blame me. You can tell everybody it was my fault. That's okay. He prepared from start to finish, which is, again, something that you mentioned before. Very rarely do we see a survivor have the ability to kind of map out their whole game from the beginning in a way that he did and have it work so beautifully well.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one criticism that was leveled at Todd's game from some of the other players was this suggestion that at times it seemed he changed targets just for fun to see if he could. And I asked him if that ever happened when I interviewed him. And he said when they voted out Jean Robert, it was partially because he saw Amanda trying to kind of take some control and have a lot of power. And he wanted to make sure the game was in his hands. He said, quote, "It may have been a sporadic move, but I knew as long as people could see that what I want happens, I had an upper hand in the game."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think that, if we're going to talk about Amanda as far as this rule is concerned, too, I mean, they did a lot of discussing and a lot of strategizing together. And so he was really in on all of the strategy and had the ability to take moves essentially away from Amanda, which I didn't realize the first time I watched this season how great Amanda really was. I was very impressed with her gameplay and her ability to see what was happening and strategize, talk to people, come up with ideas and moves potentially for the game. But it really did get taken over by Todd, which I thought was fascinating, because watching the season unfold, you would think Amanda should win And I just was reminded Amanda finished third.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah, before I get to Amanda, I do want to say we could go on and on with examples about how Todd controlled the game, much, you know, like, you know, we were just saying, but there's really no need to. So, yeah, you know, moving on to Amanda, she was his partner in crime almost throughout the whole game. When I interviewed PG after she was voted out, I asked her what the most eye-opening thing was that she saw on TV but hadn't known about while she was out there. And she said the same thing you just said. She was really surprised about how much Amanda was doing and had no idea how much she was contributing in terms of strategic gameplay. Mm-hmm. And the reason was, she said, Amanda had been doing such a good job of staying under the radar. But that's where Amanda went wrong here.
Yes.
She understood scheming and plotting. She knew she needed a strong alliance. She did her fair share of deceiving and backstabbing, even if she wanted to pretend otherwise later. But as PG indicated, she hid her scheming too much. She became one of the earlier victims of what would later become a special corollary to this first rule, warning against exactly this.
Yes. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, everybody knew she was solidly with Todd during the game, but at least some of them didn't know she was more than a tag-along, much like you said.
Right.
She was a partner in the planning, and they frequently discussed the possibilities on how to play. So when it came time for that final vote, Amanda was at a disadvantage because at least some of the jurors felt she was as much a tag-along as Courtney.
Right. And I think that this is something we've discussed in previous podcasts, where it's the flashier player ends up getting the credit for the moves, and Todd knew enough to make him even seem more flashy to people when he talked to them and the way that he presented himself. So it certainly worked to his benefit to get the credit for the moves that Amanda was actually coming up with, because Amanda was perceived in a much different light. She wasn't seen as a flashy player because the conversations she was having were very quiet. They were with Todd. They were with maybe one person, but it wasn't these big conversations where, you know, Todd would almost bring everybody into the fold and have a sit down and go, okay, is this what we're doing? Is everybody in agreement that this is what we're going to do? And really kind of flip things around, where you never saw Amanda doing that. She would have those one-on-one conversations, but she was never bringing everybody to the table to talk to them at once, coming up with a grand move on her own. It was always on the heels of Todd presenting it to the group. So yeah, she never got credit for those ideas that she and Todd came up with together, or she might have come up with on her own.
Right, right. Now, I just moving on to the second place person, who we forgot was second place. You know, I mentioned that people saw Courtney as a tag along, and that's not me lobbing an insult at her. In the finale, she admitted that she had just slipped through the cracks to get to Final Four, and she used the term tag along for herself. She capped it all off by noting that she was not a lifelong Survivor fan, had no strategy or any idea what she was doing. But as Todd described at the reunion, he saw that he needed her around and therefore he kept her. It was not so much a conscious decision that Courtney herself made so much as him leading her.
Right. And I will say that this Courtney benefited Todd in not just necessarily a strategy component, but the idea that there was a smaller in stature person that Todd could use. I mean, if you come in thinking this is what I need because I'm smaller in stature, so I need to find someone that will be weaker than I will be perceived. And not that anyone was weak, but again, perception is reality.
Unless you were trying to chop a rope, right. You would.
But, you know, there were things that she was clearly very strong at. And and that's the beauty of Survivor challenges, is that there are things that people's physical build helps them in. And we saw her do that when she won immunity. So I do think that the fact that she existed was just a bonus for Todd, that in that, if that was his idea coming into the game, and then there she was, and then she was on his tribe, it's like all of the ideas that he had were just coming together. So that was just an added bonus, if you will, that he was able to find someone like that and that they actually had someone like that on his tribe.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving to the second rule, it says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. In the very first episode, Jean Robert had Todd pegged, saying he seemed like someone who was a little devious and sharp. Amanda said something similar about Todd being devious in the second episode, and Leslie told Todd about the idol clue because she could tell he knew the game. How could they all immediately figure out what Todd was like? I suspect from a few things. First, they probably watched Todd at pregame Ponderosa.
Mm-hmm.
How he behaved, interacted, what he was reading, etc. Second, a smart player knows that there are certain archetypes cast for each season. Todd wasn't there to be the strong man.
Mm-hmm.
Combined with the way he was acting, I'm sure others who were paying attention realized he was there as the super fan.
Right. And you have to take someone like Jean Robert at their word when they call him out almost immediately, because again, Jean Robert's job is to read people, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're sitting around Ponderosa looking at the people that you're playing this game with, I mean, that's what Jean Robert does at a poker table every time, right? So that's a perfect setting for him to really make those determinations about someone like Todd. Because, yeah, if you are able to call someone out so quickly, there had to have been something that led you down that path early. And it had to have been Ponderosa.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, even with the people knowing that, even with Todd making alliances and then breaking them, even with him getting a reputation as a backstabber, even with people emailing me during the season to tell me how he clearly broke this rule, I said at the time, and I still say now, he didn't. And the reason is it never caught up with him.
Right.
You know, the rule is here so that other players don't realize what's going on and turn on someone. But Todd managed to do what few players have done, although we talked about and to one of those players last podcast in the form of boss man Rob Cesternino. But Todd convinced people he was lying to everybody else but them.
Mm-hmm. That's a great ability to have in order to play Survivor. But here's where I think that whole combination of who Todd is as a person, again, worked to his benefit. Because in addition to his maybe being schemey and plotting a lot and coming across as a strategist, he also was a nice person. You know, when he would play with someone and he would have conversations.
You're getting ahead.
I know this, but it is part of this rule. I do think because it balanced itself out.
Right.
The fact that he was never called out on it was the way that it was presented to whoever he was speaking to.
Yes.
And you can come across as a slimy individual and everything that you do, people question and then they go and talk to other people about it. That didn't happen for Todd because the way that he presented this information to whoever he was talking to, even though people knew it in the back of their mind, that like, I think he's mm-hmm. scheming. I think he's really like manipulative, but he's fine with me. And that was an ability that Todd had that we don't see very many players able to pull off in the manner that Todd did.
Right. Absolutely. Now, since Todd didn't have a problem in this rule, it's pretty safe to say that neither did Courtney or Amanda. By the time other people realized that the three of them were in such a tight trio, it was too late. They couldn't mount a significant attack. And so it didn't matter.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, the fact that they were able to coordinate everything so nicely and carry themselves all the way through to the final three is a very impressive feat. And it's not something that we see happen very often, especially now with the way the Survivor is played.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right. The third rule talks about being flexible. Now, given that Todd did what you just said, stuck with his very first alliance to the end, how do you think he did in the third rule?
I still think he was incredibly flexible, even though he stuck with the people that he planned on sticking with. He was able to determine after each, well, I would say with each tribal council, like what was going to benefit his game the best and change the vote up if he needed to. Now, we've already talked about Amanda being part of this. So I think the two of them mm-hmm. were being flexible together when they needed to change. Oh, we're going to target Jean Robert this time as opposed to who we were planning on voting out. And so I think that he looked at what was happening and was able to change his course without having to change his final destination. he was still going to be able to make it there with the two people that he wanted. But in order to get there, he had to maneuver his way through.
That sounded like a flight attendant joke. You know, we are changing course without changing your final destination, you know.
Well.
I agree. And, you know, some people might say, well, but wait a minute. How could you say he was flexible when the whole part of this rule says you can't just stick to one alliance and hope that it succeeds? Well, he didn't just hope. And, you know, he is similar to several of the other winners we've discussed during the countdown, like Sophie and Ewell. And as a matter of fact, this rule, as it was written back at the time, specifically used Ewell as an example, mm-hmm. saying the key was that Ewell didn't just hope the alliance survived. He worked at it. He yes. ensured everybody in the I-24 was comfortable. He subtly manipulated the situation such that nobody wanted to jump ship, even though it might have been a better option for some of them. He essentially convinced the others that they didn't need the flexibility. So he convinced the others to go against this rule, thus using it to his advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing Todd did, persuading right. other people that, you know, he was a better choice to take final tribal council, for example.
I know, which is amazing that so many people were like, yeah, I should go sit next to Todd.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as far as Courtney and Amanda, I do think Courtney was the ultimate inflexibility because she was like, I don't care who goes as long as it's not me. And Amanda was somewhat the opposite in that she spoke of other possible options, but always reverted to the main alliance. I mean, you did mention how she worked with Todd, but often that was Todd pushing the way he wanted to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think she tried, and I do think that we've got to give her some credit because I do think that she was looking at her options and she mm-hmm. was determining whether or not I should take this person versus this person. And it came down to who she thought she could beat. So then this brings us back to the way that Todd was able to present himself to her and to everyone else, where in her mind, Amanda thought that the jury would focus on that aspect of Todd, that he was manipulative, as opposed to the fact that, you know, maybe if I bring Denise, they're going to focus on the fact that she's a mother and she's got this great backstory. So Amanda was attempting to be flexible, but when she did all of her equations, if you will, and worked out all the numbers, she thought Todd was a safer bet. And that does go back to just give him props with how good he was at convincing right. all of them that he was the better choice. And she still, I mean, in interviews that she gave after the finale, she decided, no, I made the right choice by bringing Todd. I still don't question that. And I think it's interesting that she still felt that way, even though she ended up not winning.
Although some of that, you know, may be chalked up to human nature. Nobody ever wants to have buyer's remorse.
Oh, for sure. Know, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, and they did similar things, but of course, Todd was rewarded for it.
Yes.
In the end. Now, the fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. Todd said in the very first episode, I will do whatever I need to do to win that $1 million. And he certainly wasn't about to let emotional attachments get in his way. Sometimes he even had to fight against the emotional thinking of others, like Courtney wanting to get rid of Jean Robert. Now, mm-hmm. she had very good reasons to want him out, as was discussed in the main podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But Todd needed him at the time for his game.
Right.
As he told us after explaining it to Courtney, right now, I need my numbers, and Jean Robert is one of my numbers. Deal with it, bitch. And that was him calling her that, not me calling you that again.
I understand. We're past that. I know. Yeah. You know, you're past that. You're being nice to me now.
Right, right.
Right, sure. Where were we?
I don't know. So Todd came into Survivor knowing it was a game, and he knew he was going to form relationships and have to vote these people out. He understood the emotional part of the game much better than, say, Amanda, who admitted as much when I interviewed her.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that Todd, but again, I go back to he's not making an emotional choice, but he is able to make it appear as if there is some emotion to that choice, if that makes sense. Like, he was very good at convincing people that, like, this is not easy and this is hard and I don't want to do this and I'm struggling. And I appreciate the way that he presented it to everyone, because it was matter of fact, but it was also meaningful in a way. Whereas mm-hmm. I do think Amanda, we did see that she struggled with this component quite a bit, because she liked people and she would promise them certain things and put herself in a situation that made it more sincere than someone like Todd, who is presenting like, oh, this is really hard. She was the type that was assuring people, I'm not going to backstab you, and I won't do this and I won't do that. And then she ended up having to do it. And I think that in Survivor, there is this thing that happens when it becomes more or too personal to someone, that it has more of that effect. So it was almost like people expected it from Todd, because the way he had been presenting himself, like they weren't surprised when he did certain things. But with Amanda, I feel like it would surprise them, like, oh, well, she's such a nice person. How could she do that to me? And I think she struggled with that quite a bit as well.
Yeah. I mean, the emotional part of the game definitely caught up with Amanda. And you said in Survivor, it can happen. I've seen it happen in much shorter games, in a game of Mafia. Okay. You know, where you're trying to figure out who's in the Mafia, and or you're in the Mafia and you're thinking you want to kill off the other side. And in both cases, I've seen it happen where someone's like, oh, you know, that person, they're new. Let's let them stick around a little longer. And it turns out they're in the Mafia and they win.
Right.
Or that person, they got knocked out early the first two games of the night. Let's let them stick around. And there was one time I was in the Mafia with someone else, and he was like, oh, I don't want to do this, you know. And I said, well, you know, rule number four, man. And sure enough, that person ended up taking us out and winning the game. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, I'll never do it again. I'll never allow my emotions to control me.
See, you know? He needs the rules.
Right. And that's just in a short game there. Now, you know, most of us are friends and know each other. So that, but yeah, you really get to know people, obviously, here. And it just caught up with Amanda.
Right.
Courtney told me, I think the game was really hard on Amanda. She was a good emotional person, and it bothered her and started apologizing and had guilt. I don't know what happened, but I had the highest regard for her. I have nothing bad to say about her. I don't know. I guess it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ended by saying, I wonder what it would be like to have feelings.
And this is why we love Courtney.
Because yes, exactly.
She will just tell you exactly what she thinks.
Yeah.
And even though, I mean, she certainly had her reasons for having issues with Jean Robert. I mean, 100%. But I don't think that was necessarily an emotional reaction that she was having to that. I think it was just very Courtney. You know, Courtney, I think, is an interesting person, because she's just honest with how she feels. And so I don't think she lets her emotions control her. I think she's just very much like, this is me, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. And if you don't like it, I don't care. And so it's not even necessarily like letting her emotions control her. She's just telling you exactly what she thinks. And sometimes in Survivor, that works really great for you. And sometimes it works against you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, going back to Amanda, I'd say she seemed to be doing fine when she was merrily going along and backstabbing people with Todd. And I mean, like, she was okay when she booted James. But then emotion did start to take over. After spending the day alone with PG, she suddenly felt a bond that hadn't been there for a month.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we could see on Amanda's face how depressed she was. She had to vote out PG. And it seemed like this was the beginning of the end for Amanda. She was done. She said herself in the finale that she was over all of it. She had made it through 37 days and she couldn't do the final 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that it's when it gets really cutthroat and you're getting down to the end, you have to have a certain makeup in order to feel okay about everything that has transpired, and then to have to defend everything that you've done. And I do think that that was a real struggle for Amanda, that you, like you said, we saw it on her face. I mean, it was something that not only did she struggle with, but I think the people playing the game with her struggled with it too, because that was how they saw her. And so they saw her as this really kind, nice person. And then when they realized what she was doing, it hurt them so much more, because it was coming from Amanda.
Yeah. Now, the fifth rule talks about the social game and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice. And Todd is a perfect example of how important the pretend part is. You mentioned this earlier, and I yelled at you.
Yes, you did. You
know, he connected to people. He made social bonds with them. And all the while, he knew he was going to put them on the jury and would be wanting their votes. And we saw him saying a few not so nice things about some of his fellow players along the way. But other contestants told me in interviews that he kept the snide part of his personality hidden. Mm-hmm. Like when, you know, I quoted him calling Courtney a bitch. He would never have done that to her face.
Right.
Which flipped that with Courtney and she would have. You know, Amanda talked to Courtney specifically about how many people liked Todd and how he had made connections with a number of jurors. You know, in the recap episode, Todd was doing impressions and just having a great old social game.
Mm-hmm.
He had that ability, you know, to work these people.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. Kind of like he can work a room really well.
Yeah,
I think he's very good at reading a room and seeing the people that are around him and understanding how to relate to each one in regards to like what they need at that point and what they need at that moment. He was very, very good at doing that, and it didn't bother him. And I think the reason why it never bothered him is because he came into this game with that mindset. He had already determined that. It wasn't like he had to play the game and then go, oh, Jesus, this is hard, and have to have that conversation. He had it with himself way before he walked onto that, you know, airplane to bring them to China. I mean, he definitely was already there in that mindset. And that could very well have been part of his shtick, if you will, at Ponderosa. You know, I mean, because it was so planned out, I wouldn't be surprised if he even planned out things like that at Ponderosa.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I already mentioned one comparison to Courtney, but another is that she had a sharper edge to her. Not on the sword, perhaps, but to her. You know, in the finale, as they were looking ahead to Final Tribal Council, Courtney mentioned her, quote, winning personality. And noted, I'm sure I've ruffled a few feathers. And Amanda admitted to me that one of the things that she regretted about her own game was she just didn't have as many personal connections with a lot of people. And PG similarly told me that while she spent a lot of downtime talking to the others in the final four, Amanda just kind of held herself off a bit.
Yeah.
And so you had Todd in there mixing it up, making friends, and Amanda holding back.
Yeah, Todd's like that cool kid at school that makes you crazy because you're like, what has this guy got that I don't have? And I feel like Amanda probably was struggling with that, too, just playing the game with him, because obviously you're going to be watching what everyone is doing. And I think Amanda was trying so hard to convince herself that people will see Todd as the schemer that he actually is, that she wasn't seeing how people were perceiving him. And I really do feel like it was like that cool kid in school that everybody just thought was great. You know, he's the kid that could do anything at the, you know, wherever he ended up, like he could make friends with anyone and he could go anywhere and always fit in. And people never looked at it and thought twice about it. Whereas someone like Amanda was presenting herself as a little more standoffish and that nice girl and the person that didn't want to be judged and didn't want to put herself out there as much. And then so as soon as she does do that, suddenly people are taken aback because they don't expect it. And so I really do think that those two personalities were working against each other in a great way for Todd and in a horrible way for Amanda.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, the sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And I'm going to reference what James said in the episode 8 Tribal Council. He noted that although he was viewed as a threat, the greater threats were actually the talkers who could switch things up and make alliances. And he was right on the money, but people didn't listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we discussed in the first rule how Todd had specific ideas of who he wanted as allies. The reason for aligning with Courtney was because she was smaller and weaker than him, which you brought up again. So he would not be perceived as the biggest threat to the strength of the tribe if they lost and everyone wanted to vote out the weakest link, which often happens. Later in the game, he didn't want to be seen as a threat to win at all, which we've also talked about. Now, I asked Todd if he was shocked that the others didn't get rid of him heading into the final three. He said, I was shocked they didn't get rid of me at 7 or 8. They knew I was a diehard Survivor geek and I was being very manipulative. I'm really, really, really surprised these people kept me around.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked why he thought they kept him, he guessed that he manipulated his way into their trust. And I agree. And to go back to what you said, where I said I would have more to say about this, the term I would use is that he was gaslighting Amanda, Courtney, and Denise by saying he would lose in the end due to all the people he stabbed in the back. He just, he kept saying it. He kept saying it until they were convinced of this, that this was a fact.
Yes.
And in the meantime, he felt he could win and told me he thought he would have a good chance of swaying the jury, but he sure as heck wasn't going to tell them that.
Right. And I do think that this was something that he did throughout his game. Mm-hmm. Because the more that you repeat a narrative, the more it becomes kind of embedded in someone's brain. And so his focus on James and how much of a threat James was in a physical sense was something that people started to repeat. And then the fact that James had the two idols who, you know, I mean, as far as James is concerned.
And the big muscles.
Well, yes, so the physical component I just addressed. but, you know, James was so much kind of under the guise that this alliance was going to work and this alliance was solid, that the use of those idols never even entered his mind because he didn't think that it was necessary. And it, so it was one of those things that Todd was able to convince people of just by referencing it, by talking about it. And I do think that we saw him, he did this throughout the whole game. I mean, I think that the gaslighting is a perfect explanation of how he convinced them that they would beat him in the end. And he said that to anyone that would listen, like anyone who sits next to me is going to beat me because I've gotten so many people mad and I've upset so many people and I manipulated so many people. And it really did, I think, affect Amanda more than anything, because Amanda really did have a choice to say, I want Todd gone and keep Denise. And she opted to keep Todd. And I do think he was very, very convincing in what he said to them about how that final tribal was going to go.
Yeah. And just to verify, she did have that. Courtney told me she didn't want to get rid of Todd. But if Amanda had said, let's vote out Todd, Courtney would have done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Courtney was, to her credit, I mean, I know that we, you know, she used the term tag along to talk about herself, but I think that Courtney was the best kind of tag along that you would want to have, because it wasn't like she wasn't trying to play the game. She was understanding, well, if this is what happens, then this is going to be the best thing for me, even if that happens. And I'm still working with these individuals. And so if that's what she decides, I want to be able to work with her. So I'm going to go along with it. So she was working through the options as well. And I do think that, yes, that probably would have been what we would have seen happen. But I don't think it was just because she was kind of throwing her hands up in there and going, whatever. I think she was processing things the same way that Amanda was.
Right. Well, and what she had said to me was, you know, at the time, Amanda had immunity. And she said, well, in that situation, you do what the person who's wearing the necklace wants, you know, and then you can always blame her, too. So, yeah.
She was very aware of what was happening.
And I believe Todd told me, had he been voted out, he would have voted for Courtney to win.
Interesting.
So now, speaking of Courtney, I did mention at the beginning of the podcast that I knew she wouldn't win going into the finale. But Jean Robert beat me to it by a couple months because he said in episode 7's Tribal Council that he very much saw Courtney making final two or three because she was not a threat. We were both right.
There you go. Good job, Jean Robert.
Yes, he occasionally got something right.
But she managed to pull out multiple votes.
She did. She did. So, all right. The seventh rule covers dealing with idols and advantages. Now, idols were still fairly new to the game, but Todd was right in the thick of things. As we discussed earlier, he got information about the first clue from Leslie because she figured he knew the game and wanted to work with him. That went real well for her. Then he pretended to be nice. And to Dave, when they kidnapped him, even though Todd found Dave incredibly annoying, as did like everyone in the world, which led to Dave giving him that idol clue. But idol clues and the idols themselves were much more cryptic in China than they are now. even with multiple clues, Todd couldn't figure it out and had to loop in Amanda, which also had the effect of solidifying their alliance a bit more. They, of course, found it and gave it to James so he could pull off a blindside that never happened, thanks to Balut. And, you know, to further solidify James within their alliance.
Right. And this was a phenomenal plan. I mean, what a great plan that you have an opportunity like this. And they, and this goes back to the weird twists of Survivor and how you're able to kind of manipulate the game based upon what's being presented to you. So it's not like Todd walked into this season knowing that there was going to be this kidnapping element, right?
Right.
But he was sharp enough to understand how I can utilize this to my benefit, because as soon as someone comes over from the other tribe, if they're coming with something, which he knows that they are because Jeff hands it off in front of everyone, he was able to work that into his game. And it just goes to show how good he was at presenting himself as the person that everybody wants to be friends with, because that was immediately what happened. I mean, everyone who was kidnapped, or when, you know, someone else was kidnapped, I mean, they all went to Todd, and Todd was getting all of this information, to his credit, was pulling off something that very few people can do when you're meeting someone in such a short amount of time. And then they are connecting with you in that way that they're willing to share such powerful information. So for sure, the fact that he was able to take the spin that Survivor was presenting with him and work it so well to his advantage, it would have been awesome to see that move actually play out.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I did think that one funny scene was Todd explaining to James not only where to find the second idol at his camp, but also how to use the idol. Okay.
Right.
When you get to tribal council, this will happen. Jeff will say that, you know.
Yeah. Yes. And then James was very proud of himself that he had both of them. And Todd was very frustrated because he told them how to find it and gave him one.
Well, this is one of those questions that I was talking about that I wrote in my notes. Why didn't Todd ever ask, you know, James for one? And then I look at my interview and I said, why didn't you ever ask James for one? So my brain apparently still works the same way it did back then.
Nice.
And Todd said they actually made a deal so they would share the idols together if they ever needed them. So that's why Todd never specifically asked for them back. And he wasn't worried until later, when the game had progressed and James still hadn't given one to him, hadn't offered it to him.
Yeah.
And that's when Todd became concerned.
Right. And I think that it's interesting that that was the dynamic that Todd had with James, considering also how concerned Amanda was that James had both of those idols. Mm-hmm. So clearly Todd is sharing information with James, but not sharing that information with Amanda, because she doesn't know that there's this plan in place that they're all going to share it. Clearly, because she's very concerned that James still has those two idols.
Right.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we can move on to Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting, and says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Todd not only understood this rule, but as we've already discussed, took specific precautions to guard against it. He knew he didn't want to be seen as the weak early on, so he brought along Courtney. He didn't want to be seen as the strong later, so he brought along Aaron and then James. And then as his foursome started knocking people out on their, you know, march toward the end, he picked off the bigger threats when he could, always keeping in mind who fit where in his puzzle, always planning for the end game.
Now, something else, too, that I think should be mentioned here, as far as all three of the people who were sitting in that final tribal, they all had one idea in their mind as far as that final tribal council, which I always find this fascinating. I know I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but Courtney has talked about it in how they all wanted to sit next to each other because mm-hmm. they were all so similar. Like, they were all young. They were all, you know, very similar in just their, in kind of what they presented. You know, is they didn't have like the mom archetype sitting there with the young kid sitting there right. with the, you know, the bodybuilder type sitting there. They were all very similar in the way that they presented themselves to the tribe as young, beginning their careers kind of individuals. And so I thought that that was really fascinating that mm-hmm. they wouldn't be able to kind of pick everybody apart by their personality. And then also they couldn't pick everybody apart because they all played the game together. The three of them were from the start to finish playing the game as a threesome. And it's one of those things that I think that it made it that much more interesting to see them sitting in the final three together, because there wasn't a whole lot of definition as to who they were as a person and how they played the game. So people really had to look closely at it. And I thought that was fascinating that that was something all three of them were mindful of as to who they wanted to sit next to in the final three.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, is fairly frequently discussed or has been on Rob Has a Podcast, is do a bunch of older adults want to give $1 million to a 21, 22 year old?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do young people want to give it to an older person? Does right. the mom archetype work out? Does, you know, you have to look at the way things work out. But if you're sitting there, like you said, with people who don't have that variation, mm-hmm. then that doesn't play into it.
Right. Yeah.
One less thing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. So now we can move into the long awaited Appendix B, which covers the jury phase and final tribal council. And I think everyone knows Todd was a superstar here.
Yes, he was.
And kudos to you for waiting, you know, till Appendix.
You know what? Listen, people might be a little bit bored with this one because I didn't jump around enough, okay?
Oh, is that it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, we're near the end. So, yes, you're right. You are so right.
I'm gonna eat my apple now.
Oh, no, don't take a bite of the apple.
I'm going to do it.
You know, Todd knew exactly what he was going to say to the jury. There was even a secret scene from before Final Tribal Council where Todd discussed how he planned to emphasize that he was playing a game and played strategically. He thought a lot of the jury members could be upset with him, but he intended to talk about how well he outlasted them while also saying he couldn't have done it without them and buttering them up.
Yes.
He figured the only reason he wouldn't win is if people judged solely on emotions. And he knew if the jury looked at his gameplay, he would win. And he was right on all counts. He followed his plan to perfection in the actual final tribal council.
Yes.
Todd understood the necessity of making a good impression and saying what they needed to hear. He apologized without apologizing, saying that all of his personal relationships with them were real, but the strategy was just part of the game. His opening statement was that he hoped the jury could see the difference between strategic decisions and personal relationships. He came to play strategically. He knew he couldn't do the physical side, but he could be the most strategic, which was his dream. And all of this managed to encompass two main points of this appendix.
Right. And what I will say, too, like one of the things that people in the final tribal council, I think, suffer from is not having a firm thing to say when they start.
Mm-hmm.
They all know that Jeff Probst is going to say, okay, now it's your turn to say what you're going to say. Everyone knows that that's what's going to happen. And if you don't know what direction you're going in from the start, you immediately will lose people on that jury. They're just not going to be listening to you. If you start with, which we saw Amanda do,
mm-hmm.
clearly you're not presenting yourself in a fashion where you are here to play, I'm here to win, and I'm going to argue to why I should. And what I thought was so phenomenal about the presentation that Todd gave was how he thanked them within three sentences. It was almost a beautiful thing, because what you were doing in that moment, and I will say, you are acknowledging everyone who was sitting mm-hmm. over there, and you are thanking them for everything that they did for him in allowing him to sit where he now sits. So it's almost like a backhanded compliment. Like, it, right. because of you, I'm sitting here, and because I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. So, but thank you for playing the game with me the way that you did, because it allowed me to be in this position. So it's like he's insulting them, but he's not at the same time. And I just thought it was so beautiful the way that he was still manipulating them in the way that he was speaking to them. But he clearly had a plan, and he just presented it so well and so clearly. There was no question where Todd was coming from. He was very succinct, on point. And even the way that he spoke was, there was no hesitation. He didn't waffle. He didn't go back and forth. It was very firm in his responses, and he knew what to say and how to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as he moved on to the questions, Todd's response to Jean Robert was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what he had to say, and he effectively shut down Jean Robert while at the same time flattering him as the biggest threat. I mean, right. James even laughed out loud about Todd leaving him speechless.
Yeah.
Todd's response to Frosty was very good as well, saying that what Todd built with Frosty as his friend was real, but was also strategy to take Frosty in and put him on the jury. Todd also did the best job of responding to Jamie's questions about why the others shouldn't win, as compared to Amanda's answer, which was nonsensical, because she said that if Todd was so good, why'd he have to lie so much? That's part of being right. so good, Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
Todd added that he did the dirty work for the nice girl.
Yes.
It's not a coincidence. I went over at the beginning of the podcast who voted for Todd. It's not a coincidence that Todd got votes from all three of them plus PG. And at least Jamie and Jean Robert specifically said Todd convinced them at Final Tribal Council.
Right. And this is something that we have talked about previously. If you are presented with an opportunity to compliment the mm-hmm. individual who is asking you a question, then you have more of a chance to actually gain their vote. Now, we've also discussed whether or not people walk into Final Tribal Council with their minds made up. And I think sometimes it's more obvious and it's more apparent.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that in this particular season, there were three people sitting there that could potentially get votes from everyone. And so there was a lot of question as to who was going to actually win the season, yep. because it really could have gone anyway. You start looking at who's on the jury and who they could potentially vote for, and why would they vote for this person? So he had to sell it in that Final Tribal Council, because as I said before, they were so similar in who they were in their personalities, their ages, and where they were in their life. And they had all played the game together the entire time. Now it's time to step up and separate myself from these two and explain to you why what I did was better than what they did. And that whole idea that he was just the schemey, manipulating person, clearly he was continuing to scheme and manipulate during Final Tribal Council, but he did it in such a way that nobody thought that that's what he was doing. And Amanda, I think, really was relying too heavily on the fact that, well, that's what the jury is going to focus on, that he was scheming and he was manipulating everybody and he backstabbed more than anyone. And he owned it. He was right. like, yeah, I did the dirty work for these two sitting next to me. And they're sitting next to me because I had to do that, even though Amanda did so many of those things on her own. But she didn't own it. And he owned it. Whether or not it was true, he absolutely owned it.
Yeah. And the thing is, he didn't just nail his preparation for himself, but also his prediction for the other two.
Yeah.
He said in that same secret scene that he believed the jury perceived Amanda as a nice, kind girl who was out of her element.
Yes.
She was humble and reserved, but she got caught up in her words and choked up a lot. And he thought that would hurt her. And who, boy, was he right? You know, I mean, we already discussed Amanda's emotional state near the end of the game, and she was pretty much falling apart by the final four.
Right.
After that penultimate final, the final four tribal council, Amanda said that she was, quote, so over this, and complained that Todd made her look bad in that tribal council. The funny thing was, he didn't even do it on purpose. She made herself look bad
mm-hmm.
by going against her word to Denise and then trying to hem and haw about it.
Right. And I really do feel like this is one of those situations that we see happen quite a bit in Survivor, where people are not rewarded for being a good person. People are actually ridiculed for being a good person and showing that they're struggling with being a good person. Instead of Amanda getting credit for being a good person and it being difficult for her, people are shocked that she could be a good person and still play the game of Survivor. Where someone like Todd, who is perceived as manipulative and schemy, well, then we're not going to hold it against him. When the two of them were doing the same thing together, we're going to hold it against Amanda and give her a hard time for backstabbing me or treating me badly, but I'm not going to hold it against him. And then you have someone like Courtney, who was just brutally honest and just told you what she thought. And so I kind of feel bad for Amanda, because Amanda was like just trying to be a good person. And you've got schemy Todd, and then you've got Courtney that'll just be like, I don't care what you think, I'm going to tell you what I think. And then she gets credit for that too. So yeah, it was like, you know, she gets rewarded for being brutally honest. He gets rewarded for being a plotty, schemy person. And Amanda gets nothing for trying to be a nice person.
I know. But I mean, the thing is, at Final Tribal Council, she, you know, her opening statement was weak.
Yes.
And PG's comments to Amanda encapsulated a lot of my own thinking at the time, saying she was tired of seeing Amanda looking at her with those doe eyes.
Yes.
Sounding apologetic because she wanted Todd to take the fall, which, of course, led to more doe eyes from Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
This appendix does note that if the jury is looking for an apology, the finalist should give it to them. But the key point is the finalist needs to know what the jury really wants.
Right.
We've already talked about Todd understood that. This group didn't just want it. Oh, I'm sorry. They wanted mm-hmm. to know that the members of the final three did something.
Right.
But Amanda was so busy being contrite that she failed to point out her own strategic contributions. The only thing that we saw her talk about was the James blind side. Now, was that a good move? Yes. But as Eric pointed out in his own comments, it was also kind of obvious. Again, math.
Yeah.
You know, Amanda didn't bring up her own strategic contributions. To put it very bluntly, as if I were Courtney, Amanda's performance in front of the jury was horrible. She sat there looking depressed and broken at a time when she should have been upbeat, pushing herself as the best player ever. As Courtney told me, Amanda kind of fell apart during Tribal Council.
Right. And you add that to the fact that she was so in the shadows with all of the work that she was doing with Todd.
Right.
They didn't know that she had been involved in all of those decisions right along and actually giving him ideas and coming up with these things together, making these decisions together, in addition to also winning immunities, the last two, which are mm-hmm. the most significant immunities to win. There were so many points of her game that she could have sold. And unfortunately, this is a situation that we see a lot. If they don't see your game during the game, you can't then try to convince them in Final Tribal. And if you don't convince them at all, then they're not going to think you did anything. And so, right. You know, Amanda suffered from that. And Todd just relished in it. He was like, yes, it was all me and I did everything. And I just helped these two along. So it was just an all around bad performance for her, in addition to the way that she presented herself during the game. And so unfortunately, maybe if she had come out guns blazing and really like, let me tell you about my game that you never really saw, because Todd was the one in the forefront, kind of jumping around and doing the things that you saw. I don't know if it would have worked out differently for her, but at least there would have been a better understanding as to what she did. And maybe Todd wouldn't have spent so much time building himself up. He would have been more on the defensive with what Amanda was saying.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, a huge flaw in Amanda's game. And we saw it the following season, too. Same exact flaw. And it was funny because at work, this was a few years ago, I found out there was a new attorney coming on. And her name was Amanda Kimmel. And I walked up to her and she clearly wasn't the same Amanda Kimmel. And I said, oh, well, I'm glad that you're not the Amanda Kimmel from Survivor, because that Amanda Kimmel never did good in front of a jury. you know, but the other thing is what you're saying, also, you know, kind of taking it back to my job. When I do job interviews, we have requirements that say we cannot use what's on a person's resume. So this goes back to, you know, your castmate, Will, you know, got to get it on the resume. You don't just have to get it on the resume. You have to say it in the interview. So yes. Literally, someone could give us a resume that says, I graduated cum laude from Harvard with a PhD, and I had this experience and that experience. Yep. And if they come to the interview and they don't mention those things, we are not allowed to score them on it.
That's amazing.
Okay. So it's the same situation here. She could have done all those things, and we know she did do all those things. She didn't bring it up at the interview.
Right. Well, and you know, and that's very similar to my actual profession. I know you just talked about a lawyer, but there are times when I have had juries actually say to me, we didn't know what we were going to do until we heard your summation, because you throw so much at them, like during the actual trial itself, that they don't really know how does this go with this and how does this mean, what is all of this, and how, until you actually put your arguments with those pieces of evidence and explain it all to them. And that's really what, you know, we need to have happen in a final tribal council kind of situation, is that there's so many pieces to this game and you really have to put it all together for them at the end. Now, they had been seeing what Todd was doing because it was so apparent that it was even more of a necessity for her to put it together at the end. But I do feel like, you know, that is a huge issue for Amanda, is that that idea that she wants to play the type of game that she's playing, but you can't play that game if you're not going to sell it in the end. You have to, because otherwise people are going to be confused and they're not going to know what you're talking about. And they're going to be like, well, I still don't know what I'm doing because she hasn't explained it to me, which is unfortunately what we saw happen.
Yeah. And the same is true in, you know, I mean, as you say, in a summation, in a, if you're writing a technical document, which I do, you know, frequently. Yeah. Here's this point, that point, that point, that point. There's a conclusion at the end to bring it all together. Here are the different lines of evidence. Here is where it comes to. And this is one thing I think that you lose when Survivor removed the closing arguments.
Yes.
You know, they have the opening and the questions, and that's it. But the thing is, as a player, you have to know when Jeff says you have an opening argument and you have questions, you've got to create your own closing argument.
Yes, you
know, do. Whatever that last person says to you, however they ask you a question, you have to find a way to weave it all together.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yes.
And she did not.
Right. Yeah.
You know, now moving on to Courtney, her pitch was to say she was not a Survivor fan. She had no strategy, but she figured out how to survive. Whether or not they liked her, Courtney said they should give credit to the little girl. And when I watched originally and then rewatched, I didn't think the jury would respond to something like this. And as we discussed, totally had forgotten she came in second. But Todd told me he thought he only got two votes and Courtney had the rest because she was amazing in Final Tribal Council.
Nice.
And Courtney told me, I think Todd and Amanda were both surprised because they were asking what I was going to say. And I said nothing really, but I have an English degree. I'm good with words. Chopping things with a sword, not so much, but speaking, I can do that.
Right. And this, again, goes back to Courtney being recognized for her personality that she presented openly throughout the entire duration of her game. She didn't hide the fact that she wasn't that strong. I loved that she talked about being like 7 pounds at some, you know, at one point. I mean, she was very aware of what she was bringing to the table and she owned it. And then that's what she focused on in her final tribal. And I thought she really did a great job in explaining to them why you should credit me, because I wasn't just a tag along. The fact that I'm still here is pretty damn impressive. And she really did explain herself very well and made sense that the people that voted for her, except I'm still curious with James, like I'm trying to.
I'll get there.
Okay. Well, I like my theory.
I don't know if anyone else will believe it, but
I will say, too, I don't like that Jeff asked James a couple of questions during Final Tribal. I had a little bit of an issue with that because I feel like he didn't appreciate the fact that there was like giggling and laughter happening and like that people were trying to be funny, because this is a very serious moment, right? This is This is a vote for $1 million. And James, what the hell are you doing? Like, well, you're ruining the moment.
He's lucky that Jeff didn't threaten to bust his ass back to Big Brother.
That's true. We have heard that.
Yes.
But I do think that, you know, to Courtney's credit, she did an excellent job of knowing what her strengths were, knowing what her weaknesses mm-hmm. were, and putting it all together in a coherent fashion to say, okay, here's what I was able to accomplish in this game. And it was, I did make choices and I did think things through. And I loved that she was very honest about how she was as a person in relationship to the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though she did well and Todd thought she had won, Courtney told me she knew she hadn't won. And part of it was highlighted in her response to Jamie, as well as Todd's response. Todd said that Courtney shouldn't win because she didn't want to be there in the first place. And Courtney told me that the fact Todd and Amanda were fans while Courtney was not, quote, was a little thorn in everyone's side. That really carries a lot of weight. A lot of people are fans before they become contestants.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I didn't share that with obviously someone as passionate about the game like Todd was a big problem that I didn't have that.
Right.
And, you know, as for herself, she refused to respond to Jamie because, as she told me, she really liked Todd and he was her best friend in the game. Quote, I thought he deserved to win. I didn't put myself on that same playing field. I think I spoke well for myself and earned second place above Amanda. Todd did me a good turn and was a huge reason I made it that far. I'm not going to hate him for that. Just because Jamie said dance doesn't mean I have to dance.
I will say, too, they dressed up in like similar costumes at Reality, Hearts of Reality. And it was very, very cute to see them. They were both like, she was an angel and he was a version of an angel. It was very cute. So, yes, they're clearly still very close.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say a virgin of an angel. I'm like, no, that was Eric.
No, they're very, very cute.
Yeah. Now, getting on to the James vote. James said in his speech, I'm not going to be a bitter Betty. And then he voted for Courtney. To me, he was being a bitter Betty.
Mm.
It looked to me like he was upset that Amanda and Todd outplayed him. So he voted for the one person who didn't.
That's interesting. I like this theory.
I mean, you know, we saw his face. They cut to his face when Amanda was talking about how she was the one who organized the James vote.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look happy. I don't think he knew that up till that point. I think that soured him on her. And maybe he was planning to vote for her until that point.
Interesting. Yeah, that is interesting because yes, that makes sense. I like this.
I mean, we've seen this before. People who say game, game, game. I'm going to vote totally on game. I'm going to vote totally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't.
Right.
You know, we've seen it many times where people are, you know, all high and mighty about they're going to vote for the game. And then they get mean about it, you know, and they take things personally. And I think that's my theory, my hypothesis, I guess.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I like it. It's a good one.
Now, as for Denise, because I interviewed her after the finale, I could ask why she voted for Courtney. And she said that she did because Courtney adapted well and was a fellow Red Sox fan, along with the fact that Amanda screwed her over.
Yes. Yes. And she has said that time and time again, mm-hmm. as recent as like July of 2021, that she was not a big Amanda fan because Amanda had backstabbed her twice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Now, I want to end this appendix with one more note. Todd said at the episode 13 tribal council that you need to bring a person you have a chance to beat at the end, not someone who played honorably and will probably kick your ass. This is certainly something every Survivor player should know, but we've seen too many times, we've criticized too many times people who are like, oh, yes, we have to honorable and. You know,
I want to beat the best.
To be the best, you have to beat the best
mm-hmm.
and all of that. No, no.
And then Todd that person right. walks away with $1 million check and you don't.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. With all that, it's about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts about Todd?
My final thoughts about Todd are really how impressive of an overall individual he is. And the manner in which he presented himself to his tribe from start to finish was basically flawless. Someone who should come across as a used car salesman didn't, which is really quite impressive because that was exactly what he was doing the whole way through. And I think that he recognized that about himself. And so he was able to make little changes and shift things around to present himself in a way that, like, no, I'm not selling you a bill of goods. I am here for you. And he continued to do that in his final tribal council, because I don't really believe that all of those connections were genuine. I think that was just one more selling point for him to make everybody feel good who's sitting over on that jury that, no, everything that I that was genuine, strategy was one thing, but the relationships were another. So again, he was playing up, he was pandering to everyone who was sitting in that jury, but in such an impeccable way, something that we have seen very few people be able to pull off in a final tribal council. It was almost like he had cue cards in front of him in the manner in which he spoke to everyone in that final tribal council, knowing how to answer, knowing how to answer, and knowing how to, like, what to say and the manner in which to say it. So very impressive overall. And I went into this season knowing that Todd was a great player, forgetting that Amanda was a great player. And it was probably because of the final tribal council. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing that everyone seems to remember, is that Todd killed it in final tribal and Amanda did not. And so unfortunately for Amanda, she found herself aligned with someone who was a used car salesman, but didn't make himself out to be one when he was playing with everybody out there. So everything that he needed to do, he managed to pull it together very nicely. And to walk into a game like this and basically have written your entire Survivor life, if you will, is very impressive. And he did that. He came in with a plan. He knew what he wanted to do. And he executed it in a way that, again, we've seen very few people do. But he did it great. And kudos to him for pulling that off and knowing how to get to a final tribal council with the two people that he needed to have sitting next to him in order to win the game. It was an incredible thing to watch. I loved watching it. Courtney and Amanda and Todd brought a great season to all of us, and so we appreciate that very much. So I think overall, Todd is definitely a very, very well-respected winner, and it was unfortunate that we didn't get to enjoy him on Winners at War.
Yeah, yeah. I've mentioned that I knew going into the finale that Courtney wouldn't win. I couldn't say for sure that Todd would win, because the other three could have, and probably should have, banded together to get rid of him as the biggest threat. But he was able to keep that from happening. But as I just mentioned, even Courtney told me, I thought he deserved to win. I didn't put myself on that same playing field. One other thing she told me in that same response was, it would have been disastrous if I won. People would have hated it. And I really enjoyed the fact that a Survivor player could be so perceptive, not just about the game, but about the fans as well.
Mm.
Let's face it, this season would not have been ranked number 5 if Courtney had won.
True.
But she didn't. Todd did. And he played a great game in order to do so. From rule number 1 to appendix B of the most important strategic document in history, he followed my rules almost to the letter.
It's like he had a t-shirt or something.
I know. You said cue card. I thought t-shirt, mug, you know. But he schemed and plotted from the beginning. He made sure not to do it too much. He kept emotions out of his decisions while at the same time forming bonds that would help him later. He made specific decisions to keep his threat level low. He had full knowledge of everything going on with idols and used it all to his advantage. And of course, he had one of the best final tribal council performances ever. Over the past two podcasts, we've talked about how the jury doesn't vote on the best player of the season, but rather they vote for the best player in the finals. In this season, however, they voted for the best overall player of the season because he was able to dominate the strategic game and make it to the end. And that is why Todd won.
Love it. Very good.
So, all right, well, you jumped the gun again. You brought up t-shirts and mugs before we could get to the end of it and to this ad here, you know, where we remind people that the rules are available as a poster, a t-shirt, two different types of t-shirts, mug. So anyway, For the shirts or the mugs, go to robhaswebsite.com or robhaspodcast.com. Click on the merch link. For the poster, tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2.
And if you are outside of the United States, contact me through Twitter.
Slip into
Jessica
your DMs.
Lewis, 89. Yes. That's right. To my DMs.
Yes. So before we continue, there is one thing I wanted to bring up, and it is interesting because people who are watching or listening may not know, you know, how each of us prepare. We've talked about it some, but I think it's interesting. I think you and Todd are similar because as a lawyer and on this podcast, you work from some notes. Now, I've never seen you in court, but I have a feeling it's like this podcast. You have everything laid out in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go boom, boom, boom and through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I tried to do that, I would forget things. So my notes are much more detailed. Now, some of that is because I have to, you know, I have specific quotes to throw in there and stuff like that, which obviously I couldn't do from memory. But so I'm not going to say that I'm like Amanda because, no, I'm not. But I'm not Todd either. I mean, he was able to go in there and he prepared all these things and said them, and he didn't have notes in front of him, you know? And so I think that's interesting. You know, you are more like Todd in that regard.
Look at that. No, I will say that it's something that I've utilized in my practice, obviously, and it's something judges have commented on after they see my summation. They're like, you never even looked at your notes. I'm like, no, that's because I write it all down and I put it up here. Like, I don't know how I do it, but I it's probably because I practice way too much. I do actually like practice so I can memorize a lot of things. But then, yeah, it's very, very difficult, I will say for sure. But I appreciate the preparation that you put into this podcast because I do think it allows me to be not as prepared as you might be with all of your written notes because I've told you before, I go down rabbit holes. I end up on YouTube videos that I never even knew existed. And I'm like, what am I watching right now? But it's fascinating because I learn new things by just the random, you know, things I end up clicking on. And then it brings me to something else and it brings me to something else. So this is definitely a very fun process. But yes, we do certainly approach it in a much different
manner. Yes. Anyway, as we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Once you join, you'll see so many ways to interact, have fun. You know, right now, most of it is focused on Big Brother, but not all of it. You know, there's two special podcasts for patrons just about Big Brother. And one of them is a Q&A podcast. There's a feedback podcast for the Survivor Countdown. There's monthly patron call-in shows, weekly show with Nicole. And then, you know, probably when Big Brother is over and we're on a more normal schedule where Rob isn't having to watch a whole season, at least one season a week, plus Big Brother and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all the other patron things, patron mafia. We talked about mafia, patron family feud, all these different things. And of course, there's the Facebook groups with a great community of people, including both of us, where you can talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. So again, go to robhaswebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
Yes. And you should also say hello to us on Twitter. I am at JessicaLewis89 and he is at David Bloomberg. You should follow us both because you get both sides of the story with various postings, especially since there will be a new season of Survivor starting in September. And you'll have to see how we both live tweet during the shows and how Bloomberg tries to take credit for my tweets. And, you know, it's a whole
thing. You mean the ones that I actually post before you and the timestamps show
now,
that?
We've already determined that our brains are very similar in certain things.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we're just both on that same wavelength. But there are receipts. I think sometimes I've beaten you and then you want to take credit.
Yes.
Or maybe you just see that I post it first and then you just don't do it. You're like, damn it, beat me. I know what's happening. You're checking my feed before you post.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. So you should definitely follow us both at JessicaLewis89 and at David Bloomberg.
Yes. And even though we're not podcasting about Big Brother this season, I have been live tweeting most Big Brother episodes. And in fact, I did the same thing to Rob, where I beat him by several seconds on a comment, too.
Look at you.
So
getting yourself out there.
Yeah. So the hashtag for this podcast, although we had talked about it being Fuzzbutt earlier.
Come on.
The official one is Why Todd Won, because that's what we've been doing. But hey, anyone who wants to hashtag Fuzzbutt, have fun.
I think I'm going to hashtag Fuzzbutt just because people will click on it.
They might. They might. I hesitate to think about what other things might be at that hashtag. But,
I know. It's interesting.
Yes. And of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, YXLost. Everyone should make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed, where you can find a whole wide range of things, including a lot of Big Brother stuff.
Do I get to say thank you now?
Yes, you do.
You paused for a second.
I paused. I had to take a breath.
What's coming next? No, all right, so we're going to thank Scott St. Pierre for all of the incredible editing that he does for Why Blank Lost and all of the things that are posted on our app. He does incredible work. So thank you so much, Scott, for all the work that you do. And then also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that he wrote that is very, very catchy. So you should definitely, listen, sing it at work, walk around humming it. It's great. So thank you, Will, for that incredible song. And thank you, David, for another super fun episode of traveling back in time, back to China, and watching an incredible season. I really had a fun time with this rewatch.
Yes, so did I, except for the episodes that had Dave in them. but that was just too much. But yes, thank you very much also for joining me once again to talk Survivor. As a programming note for the future here, everyone, we will be back two more times in the countdown to talk about winners. So this is number 5. We have two more times. We'll be here for the number 3 season, and we will, of course, be here for the number 1 season. So
crazy.
And then right after the countdown, we will transition into Survivor 41.
Yay!
So,
which I'm so worried about.
I am too, because all we hear on commercials are, it's a completely different game. No, Jeff, we don't want a different game. We want the same game.
And we already know that you cut way too many days off of the games. So.
I'm okay with him cutting days off if they're just like downtime days, and they needed to. I mean, they needed to for various reasons. But
sure. Like, I totally get it.
Some of the rumors that I've heard, just no, don't.
Stop.
Yeah.
Let it happen organically.
Yeah, let the game play. It's been 40 seasons. People know how to play.
Yes.
But don't want to end on a down note, so just think about there's going to be more Survivor. And
more Survivor.
Think positive thoughts until we're proven otherwise.
That's right.
So, all right. So everybody should therefore watch for us in 2 weeks when we talk about the number 3 show, number 3 season. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.